Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And today we have another guest from season 22. We are so excited to talk to them. But before we introduce them, a little bit about who they are. So we have with us a chef who has worked in Michelin star kitchens at Le Coucou, at The Nomad. Vinny, we heard you worked there too. Acadia in Chicago. And now he is a private chef. Welcome to the pod, season 22 contestant, Chef Corwin Hemming.
Woo!
What's up, people? How are you doing?
Oh, better now.
What's up, Nancy? I've been waiting for you guys to bring me on here.
Yay!
This was a work in motion. Once I started seeing like you guys brought Bailey on and she had like multiple different bits from you guys, I was like, okay, it's only a matter of time before I got on there. I gotta
put my hat coming open. For you.
It's a rite of passage these days. And we are so lucky to have an audience with you guys and talk to all of you, and particularly you, because it's now been a week since you've been on our screen. Mm-hmm. And we have a ton of questions about your experience on the show and your experience as a chef. So I'll let Bits dig into it to kick us off.
Yeah, we have like a really hard-hitting question to open this up, which is, could you tell us what Figgy Duff tastes like?
Figgy Duff, yes. Figgy Duff was like, and I don't even know if the version of Figgy Duff we got was like the accurate one, but it was this dry, it's just dry, and it tastes like spice, but it just was dry. Like me and Tristan both bit into it, and immediately it was like, somebody passed me a bottle of water. Like, this is disgusting. And then we got more context about it, like off the screen. We were talking to Kristen about it, like a little bit off screen, and she was like, yeah, it's like boiled in this bag. And I was just like, what? who made this? Why is this a thing? Like, can we, you know, and it sucks because in Jamaica, we have different versions of black cake. You know, you have rum cake, Easter bun. So it was like supposed to be what I'm used to, you know, growing up, and just missed completely. And I'm like, me and Tristan will literally fly out to this province of Canada and teach you guys how to do this, because this is not it. And if it's boiled in a bag, it's for sure not it. So yeah, me and Tristan definitely had a moment where we're like, this sucks. Like,
you guys banged it out though, which is kind of impressive, especially like you have me at boiled in a bag though. That is
doing the Lord's work with that Figgy Duff.
Yeah. Well, the easy part is the ingredients that go into it.
Right.
I think a part of being successful on Top Chef is like knowing who the judges are and what type of foods they like to eat and what they don't like to eat. Like, do your homework, like, you know, really lean into like previous seasons and see where people made mistakes. I think that those learning lessons will take you a lot further than trying to come up with an ingenious game plan for cooking, because, you know, the Figgy Duff ingredients were like raisins, and Kristen hates raisins. And somebody was like, ooh, like, you know, I would do this with the raisins if I had it. And I'm like, you're not going to get me to try to make Kristen love raisins. Like, that's just not smart.
Yes.
So that's why I decided I'm going to turn it into a barbecue sauce. I'm going to blitz it. It's not going to be present on the plate, but it is a focal point on the plate. And the rest were just Jamaican baking spices. And I remember, if you caught the episode, me and Tristan were actually in the same car driving in the BMW. And we were like bouncing ideas off each other the whole time. He was talking about how his pepper pot is traditionally eaten with bread. And I'm like, you should definitely figure out a bread component for that. And he was like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I'm going to do jerk chicken. It's screaming jerk chicken. This is what I want to lean into. And he's like, I was thinking about jerk, but I did that on the maple challenge for my steak marinade, so I'm not going to do that. And it was just a natural like conversation that we had about food that, like, you know, I don't know if you guys can tell from the season, but a lot of it's like really collaborative, and it's really genuine for
But it's still competitive, which is really fun. Like, this season is competitive in the best possible way. Like, yes, it's you guys want to win on your merits, or you want to succeed on your merits. You don't want the win to come from, oh, I tripped this guy up over here, and so like I'm taking it. It does feel like you guys are looking out for each other, but it's like, okay, this is a competition.
No,
that's
why
it's been so fun.
And it's just a testament to like everybody's character. Everybody came in super chill, super cool. Mm-hmm. Even Massimo being painted the villain, he was like behind the scenes, a very like funny person to have conversations with. And, you know, he's probably getting his heat on camera because of what he was saying in private interviews and stuff. But, you know, he was my next door neighbor in the Rosemont, and we had tea several mornings, and it was just candid conversation with Massimo. And I'm like, is he making himself the villain by being him? Yes. But is he also not the villain? Yes. So like, two things can be truthful.
Well, I mean, we've talked about it a lot too. Like, we want to give a huge shout out to Massimo, because It's television. If people can't tell that people are nice people in real life and they come on a show and they just are coming off across a certain way, like, then that's on you. Like, it's 2025. Grow up.
Also, on the spectrum of reality TV, TV villains, like,
I'm like, have you seen any of the Housewives? Like, okay, let's talk then.
He's a puppy.
Yeah. So, okay. So you kind of alluded this to, but your season, there's the collaborative element. Your season, this season started off with a team challenge. Talk to us about what that is like, walking into the kitchen and then basically having to have your first impression be with two complete strangers.
Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of like, we kind of saw it coming, you know, we're in a car together. We weren't allowed to talk to anybody else. Like, we were in a van packed up at 8 a.m. and they were like, we have this thing called hard ice, which is like, just don't talk. We don't care. Save all your energy. We know you're excited. We know you're anxious. We know you're nervous. Save it all for the cameras because we want to get like authentic moments. And, you know, that was kind of like the first talking point they gave us. And so that van ride at like 8 a.m. out to where you guys see us draw knives for our cars was just literally dead silence. Vinny was in my car and I wanted to talk to him so bad. And then I also knew Lana from New York City too. So like, you know, we gave the little like, what's up? How you doing? You know, and then we were just sat in a car. Nobody told us anything. They were like, the only thing that was spoken was bathroom breaks. And then, you know, you get thrown into this team challenge based on your car. And so we got to meet each other and like talk on our car ride to the Top Chef kitchen. And you're still trying to figure out everything out. Like, it's all fresh. It's your first time seeing Gail, Tom, Kristen in the Top Chef kitchen for the first time. Yeah. So you're literally just like kind of sensory overload. And you're like, just stay cool. And, you know, I had a thing with myself from last season. What are they going to do this season that was different from last season? You know, last season, they started off with like a soft ice break. They all went out to a bar, got to meet each other. We didn't get any of that. I was like, we're cooking today. I know we're cooking. I can feel it in my bones. We're cooking today. So just be on your toes and be ready to like, you know, either play a backseat role if somebody else is really strong and kind of wants to assert themselves, or if you feel like you need help, assert yourself. And so I just basically kind of saw where we were at. There was actually a challenge within a challenge that didn't make the air, so I'm not going to speak too much of that. But the first challenge kind of was us just getting comfortable and figuring it out. You know, we were given like multiple ingredients, so we were kind of boxed into what we could and couldn't use. It's a quick fire. You want to kind of put up something good, but you don't have a lot of time. And then also like everybody's nervous. Like, I kept saying this to people, like, if you're feeling anxious or nervous, just know like the rest of us are, because we're all sharing the same experience and groupthink is real. So like, if anybody's feeling like overly anxious, find somebody to talk to, because, you know, you saw in the first episode, Kat's hands were shaking and I'm like, she's nervous. I am too. I just breathing. I'm like focused on like my breathing technique so that I can put out something good and stay calm, cool, and collective, so we don't go down as a team. So that's kind of like where it was at in the first episode.
There is definitely a weird mind body connection thing that happens where your body almost take, when I have been in, I've been in situations, no, but when you find yourself in a very like high stress moment, your head can be completely calm and you can be really focused. And there's something about your the stress in your body that just like comes through and you can't help it. Like, you're shaking and
You're literally just dealing with
full adrenaline. Yeah.
And your body just has to literally wear it off. And then you, 20 minutes later, you're like, I don't know what was going on with me, but
unbelievable.
It's incredible. So I want to back up a little bit because you are referencing how much prep you did for the show and that you watched previous seasons. Did you watch previous seasons to prep, or have you been a fan? What is your relationship to the institution that is Top Chef before going on as a contestant?
So I watched, I want to say like season 7 or 8 when I was like super young. And that was kind of my first draw to Top Chef specifically. I think the show that got me interested in food was Iron Chef Japan with like Morimoto. That's the Super Bowl to me, is watching Morimoto dominate. This guy's record was like 58-0. And I'm like, I was in the fourth grade. I have a very vivid memory. Me and my mom were watching TV before my first day of fourth grade. And we were watching Iron Chef. And I was just like, that guy is like a legend. He's like Michael Jordan in my eyes. He's right up there with the best of them. I was like, maybe he might lose today. He didn't lose. He dominated, you know? And so between, I want to say like him and Emeril Lagasse, those are like the two icons back in like mid-2000s TV that were like, you know, my initial spark to like, I used to watch it on my, like, I'd come from home from school and watch Emeril scream bam 58 times on an episode. And so that I want to say those two were my spark pre Top Chef. But then when I was in high school, I watched like seasons 7 or 8, and I saw the chef from Philly who had won that season, and I watched this whole thing about his come to, you know, fame and like the kitchen he cooked in and like, you know, what he thought. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. Like he really was like locked in the whole time before Top Chef. So it's not a surprise that he won. He was already putting in the proper preparation and performance before that, and then just went and just cooked his way, and it, you know, it's a product of his circumstance.
I, on the Iron Chef Japan, my sisters and I used to watch it when it was like dubbed over in English. And there was always that judge, that woman who had a different profession every single episode. And we were obsessed with her. Anyway, I digress. I just have never had someone be have such core memories around Top Chef or Iron Chef Japan.
Yeah, that's, I mean, Japanese TV is like, me and my wife were talking about it today. Like she sent me a reel from like a Japanese comedy game show. And I'm like, the Japanese comedy and TV show is just it's undefeated. It's so great.
It really is. What was that show that was like on in America? It was on Spike.
Human Tetris.
Oh, like the one where they would like, it was like
the challenge.
Like hurt or something, or they'd go flying in the air.
Oh my God. The way they dubbed it too. It was such a good time. Oh my God. That's a core memory. Oh my God. Okay. Well, speaking of TV and great TV, we were talking a little bit before we started recording here just about how, you know, wild it is, because your sort of lived experience on Top Chef is part of the story, but it's not the full story of the season or even the challenge or the episode. What's it like now watching with the rest of us and just seeing everything in the kitchen that unfolds or was unfolding at the moment that you were, you know, focused on your thing over here?
Yeah, so it's crazy because there's so many times when you're like, oh, I put up something really good and am I going to win? I have no clue because I don't know what anybody else is doing.
Right.
Other than like the episode where we did the patties and Henry's banging the butter with the rolling pin, that was right next to me. So it was like shaking me and Zubair's table. But like, other than those little moments, like there's so much going on. People sprinting in the ice challenge, Massimo slipped into his table and spilled soapy water all into his, he needed butter basically because he ruined what he was cooking by slipping, and you know, he was at the bottom and I didn't hear about that. Nobody said anything. Somebody said he busted his ass, but I didn't know it was that severe that it could have gotten him eliminated based on him tripping on a floor mat or his feet or whatever. And so I had a running joke when we were shooting. I was like, the clock is a liar. They're like speeding it up. You look at it and you're like, all right, 15 minutes. All right, I'm good. And then somebody's like 3 minutes. And you're like, I just did one thing. I blinked. Like how? They're speeding up the clock. And then it wasn't until I got into LCK that I was like, I'm going to watch this clock. There's no windows in the Top Chef kitchen. So one, we're in a casino. It's all cut off. No outside access. You don't see sunlight some days. So I'm like, no, we're in a time warp and I'm going to figure out where the warp is happening. And I watched the clock the whole time in LCK. And I was like, no, it's actually real. Like you're just moving either too slow or you're moving too fast. Like one of the two, or you're on pace with everybody else. So that was my crazy moment in the kitchen for sure.
Well, on that note too, I mean, time obviously moves differently in the Top Chef kitchen versus the LCK kitchen by nature of just like having a lot less of it. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you were approaching that context or that like the LCK environment differently than you were in the Top Chef kitchen? Was there any sort of foresight or pre-thinking on that? Or were you just sort of like, okay, I got to get in here and perform?
Yeah, I wish going back, I would have did more preparation leading up to Top Chef. I was in like a weird season in life where I was breaking a lease in New York City and moving back to DC and still doing pop-ups. I did a pop-up in Connecticut. I did a pop-up in Brooklyn. I was like trying to do a pop-up in DC. So I was just all over the place before I left for the show. And so I didn't feel like I did enough due diligence on like practice timing. I think that that's the biggest thing is just practice timing, like get used to cooking and plating something in 30 minutes. I knew I can do it. I've done it in small ways before, but I've never done it on the Top Chef scale and you get one and done. So you need to figure it out, you know? And I think that first elimination challenge was like, you've got to move faster. They didn't, you know, fully show it, but you know, I missed my sauce on my plate. I know Tristan was showed not plating his sauce. There was like four or five of us that all missed the sauce or missed a component. And you're not going to get asked for it unless everybody just, you know, flat out plates perfectly. But you're ineligible to win if you miss a major component. And so you don't know where you stand when you like you're having timing issues. And that was like my biggest thing going into LCK was like, all right, I've already got the reps. I know what they want. I know what I'm doing. It's just a matter of like, you have to go execute. But LCK, it's its own different world. Tom makes up all these crazy rules and like, just wants to throw speed bumps your way. Like he'll make you refire something if he doesn't like it. Like it's like having an actual chef and you're like his chef de cuisine and you're like cooking something ready to go for a guest. And he like kind of treats it more like a restaurant. Whereas the Top Chef kitchen is more, you've just got to go and just do what you have to do to be successful and not go home today. Mm-hmm. And if you get lucky and you have a really good idea, you'll win or you'll get top three. But there's a lot of like learning curves that you have to be successful very quickly in the Top Chef kitchen.
That's a super interesting read too on just like the restaurant versus sort of like cook to survive.
Which doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like so, for me, I remember my strategy was like, hey, look, there's going to be a group of really, really phenomenal chefs. Like if you don't win, just kind of coast in the middle. And I remember like having my issues early on and having to figure it out on the fly. And it's not a natural process to like just make something and put it up for a critique. Like it's just like the R&D, like I'm going to make this and taste my sauce and then plate it this way. And then be like, I don't like that plate. Change it out. I don't like that sauce. I'm going to add more salt. I'm going to add more acid and kind of having like a natural progression. You don't get a lot of that because the time crunch is real. And every day you're in a new environment, new kitchen, new set of people. And so there's always something going wrong. And it's just always you've got to execute as close to perfect as possible versus like the restaurant feel is just you get time and preparation to put up a dish the right way. But
yeah, well, so that's, we've heard this before, this strategy of, you know, coasting versus pulling out all the stops. I have to imagine that that's kind of hard to work. It's easier said than done, right? Like nobody wants to just like be mid at what they're great at. Was that core to your strategy or were you like fighting against that to actually like really push yourself?
I was fighting against it. I think the first elimination challenge was the wake up call that like Anya cooked something like super homely, but like made it look nice. And I was like, not everything needs to be like fine dining touches. Yeah. Like, you can dull it down so long as you execute perfectly. I think that I learned really quick. Oh, Tom likes execution. Oh, Kristen likes flair. Like Kristen likes you, you know, and they all like you taking a risk and it does pay off in some ways. Like, you know, you've got to be smart. Like the patty challenge. I foresaw everybody going down on the ovens. I was like, everybody's going to use the ovens. They're all going to be fighting for space. They're probably going to need different baking temperatures. I was like, I'm not dealing with that. Like, I'm going to go use the pizza oven. I was experimenting with the pizza oven on B-rolls. And I was just like, oh, I've got the sweet spot. I've got the hot spot. If we ever need a challenge where I need this, I know how to work it. And so going into that, I was like, oh, I'm going to take a risk. Like, I'm going to go in a pizza oven. Like, everybody's going to be fighting for those ovens and or a fryer. Like, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to go sit in my comfort zone in the corner, put up something good and figure it out. And it worked in my favor. In that challenge, I didn't win or I didn't get top three, but I still put up something good and took a risk. And so a part of it's like, you just got to know yourself. I'm the person that I'm going to take risk every single time. Like if I can go for it, I'm going to go for it. And if it doesn't work, you're going to see it, you know, and that's kind of just how I live. And so I kind of had a moment with myself and, you know, there's a scene from Rocky that I like talked about on the show where like, you know, he's feeling down and sad for himself. And, you know, Apollo Creed is like, you don't have tomorrow. Like you have right now, like you keep, I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to do it tomorrow. And I remember catching myself like very early on in that moment. And then it was right after the Maple Challenge. And then I was like, yo, like you can't have another moment like this. Like regardless of what caused you to go down during the service, like you dodged a bullet. Like you didn't come here on Top Chef to exist like this. So go do what you need to do and hit the gas and stop being scared to cook. Like stop being like, I just need to put up something and just go for it. And I think you kind of saw the streak of wins that I was top 3-2. And then I won one was like me really being like, I'm not scared anymore. Like I've shook the jitters off. Like I'm here. Everybody's going to know it. And win, lose, or draw, I'm going out on my sword and kind of just embodied that the rest of the time I was there.
Mm. Yeah. It's, and you can tell that you really put it all out there. And so I'm curious, you seem to have a really good sense of where your headspace was when you were, cooking. Is there anything that took you by surprise or is there anything that really made you rethink what you were doing in the kitchen ever? And as you watch it back, is there anything that takes you by surprise?
Yes. Yes, no, maybe so. All of the above. I think I was just, once I got comfortable, I was really steadfast and being like, no, this is what I'm doing. Team challenges are hard because you have to take in another person's account and understanding of food as well. And they see things that you don't see. And so the one thing that did take me by surprise was like when I got eliminated, because we put up something and we tasted it and we were like, we're very proud of it. We didn't get saltfish. It kind of sucked. And so that's where I was like, damn, like I wish I would have, could have, should have gotten saltfish. Had I known, I could have just asked Tristan. Tristan knew. There was a moment where me and Tristan ran to the counters at the same time and I asked for saltfish and he goes, they don't have it. He goes, you didn't know that? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, fuck. And I was like, I sprinted over to Kat and I'm like cursing. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I've got to figure this out on the fly. And that would have been my woulda, coulda, shoulda. I would have, I should wish I would have just come up with a second idea where we weren't trying to figure this out on the fly, because we didn't love the cod that we got in the store. The quality wasn't there. And that would have reshaped how I would have approached that entire competition. I don't know. I think we both wanted to do a fritter, which we, you know, you saw that in the car. Like as soon as she said it, I was like, me and Kat are on the same page. It's like, we're back day one and we're talking in the BMW from the get go. And, you know, it does suck because that day everybody executed. Like, you know, they had to dig to find a critique, which they didn't love the texture of our filling, but I was like, that's how we wanted it. Like if we broke it open and there was large chunks of shrimp and fish and all the herbs and the, you know, the different peppers that we used that were from Portugal that we found at Whole Foods. And so we were really, 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 really happy with the components. We tasted everything the night before we packed up everything. And we're like, yo, we have a dish. I think that is one to beat. We passed one to Shwai and Shwai was like, I think you guys are the one to beat.
Damn. And,
you know, to go in there and see, you know, Savor and Katiana, I tasted theirs and I was like, theirs is the one to beat. That was delicious. And then, you know, get put at the bottom and it's, I'm okay with it because, you know, that day everybody just executed as well as they could have. And I didn't go out losing to myself.
That's this season though. I mean, not to throw shade, but there are some seasons where you're just like, oh, this season is heavy hitters. Like that's why, like, this is a great season on Top Chef. And so like nobody truly, I mean, I don't know if you're on Reddit, but every episode someone gets eliminated, everybody is like, I can't believe they just got eliminated. But it's like everybody, it's someone has to go home, but it, like, you know, the people are incensed for sure.
I mean, I feel like it's almost easier to go out when you know you're going home. Like, I messed up, like I'm out of here, like I didn't do it at all, like I deserve this, versus being like, I put up something really good that I was proud of, and then like they're like finding the 1% to judge. And then Tom, I just didn't like the texture. And I know Tom's a texture guy. Like he hates like slimy foods. And so that was like, was it wet? No, like it wasn't wet. And two, like if it was wet, like fritters are meant to be soft and gooey. Like think of a croquette, it like pulls apart. So you want it to be soft by nature. So the critiques I didn't agree with. I was just like, I don't care what you guys say. If we're going home,
I liked it.
Let the better dish win. Please let it be that. Let it not be your own personal perception. And that's where like, you know, to this day, I wish I would have gotten saltfish because I wouldn't have been in this situation. I have a recipe that's bulletproof for a saltfish fritter and I would not have gotten eliminated. I know for a fact I wouldn't. They would have been dying to have another bite. And so that was my one thing that I'm like, I went too soon. I picked a product that I didn't love and it got me axed. So,
well, you like you said, should have cut it though.
You can tell that the judges are like struggling to send people home.
Yeah, too. This is like finale level critique. Yeah. It's
normally
like
this early in the season, like you don't get like, these are two great dishes and someone's going home for a good dish. That's like episode 10.
Yeah. I feel like production's like usually working overtime to like make us question who's going home.
Yeah.
Not so this season. but I mean, on the flip side of that, is there something you learned about yourself or is there something that you felt just proud of that you got to surprise yourself in a good way that maybe just being on the show unlocked for you?
100% I think it's just natural growth in life, you know. I had so much to prove when I first became a chef, you know, and I did it the wrong way. I was like, I'm better than everybody and I'm, you know, I can cook better and all this just because of the kitchens I came out of, like bread that like all these Michelin star kitchens, you had to like not let yourself get bullied or not let people out cook you so you can, you know, move up naturally. And there's a lot of ego and bravado at that level, whereas I didn't have any of that coming into the show. Like I came into the show, like I want to genuinely get to know all the other chefs because I know two of them and we're all in a very rare air. It's special for all of us, you know, regardless of the outcome, win, lose or draw. And so I really just wanted to go and show like the best side of myself and, you know, kind of learned where I'm at, and it pushed me to like want to get better. Like I was like, I was feeling stagnant going into it. Like, what's next for me? I'm like bored with cooking. Like I'm not at the point where I'm opening up a restaurant, so nothing's really challenging me. I'm just going through the motions and, you know, operating an LLC to make money. And this is not my passion. Like, you know, what's next? And Top Chef gave me like that spark of life again, to where like, I'm like, all right, cool. Like I came home and immediately was like, I'm dropping everything, dropping all my clients. I'm dropping New York City. I'm moving to DC. Like I need something. I need a fresh restart. Like I need something new, and open up the Occidental here in DC, and was surrounded by like really, 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 really strong, good chefs again. And I was like, this is what I needed, like post Top Chef, is to put myself back in an air where I can be myself and be genuine. And seeing how I was in the show and seeing how I am, like, as you know, an executive sous chef in a restaurant, like right now, I'm the same person, and like everybody loves me. Like, and it's like literally at work, people like literally gravitate towards me, and I'm able to lead the way I want to and be the who I am, like naturally. And there's no like ego or bravado behind my sense of cooking or my sense of leadership. And so I think that, you know, in this kind of era that I'm in as a chef, I'm still growing. I'm still like learning who I am. But more importantly, I'm like, I'm just at peace with everything. If I got to fight it, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not entertaining this. I'm too grown. I'm in just a new season in life that I want to kind of stay here and kind of just enjoy what I'm on right now.
It's really heartwarming to hear that you had that sort of change of heart while you were on the show. And rest assured that I think everyone's really strong this season, but I think that the way you come off, at least to the audience, is like so capable, so confident, so very interesting in the way that you cook. And so now that you're post show and you said that you're opening up this new restaurant in DC, and how would you describe the tapestry of skills and experiences and styles that make up the chef you are today and what you're trying to work on?
I think it always starts with like who you are. Like having an identity is very important to being on Top Chef. And like, you know, I've got the Jamaican flag and Bob Marley like on the side of my hat. And like, you know, my culture, I've always tried to figure out, like when I was a young cook, I remember like 10, 12 years ago trying to figure out how to make Caribbean cuisine cool, how to make it like same level as like these restaurants that I'm working in, and taking components and figuring things out. And a lot of that, you know, grows over time. Once you learn the skills and the techniques of like French cuisine or like Japanese fish butchery, now you can make something like soigné on a plate with Caribbean flavors. And so I think like early on, I was in pursuit of like just trying to create something new within like Caribbean cuisine. And that was a part of my identity. It was like, all right, like this is, I know I want to do this. Like I love going to Jamaica. I love going to islands and exploring and finding new foods and all this stuff. But that's kind of where I initially leaned in. And then it got really hard once I moved to Chicago. I kind of realized, I was like, yo, you're a little bit behind the ball. Like these cooks are good. Like moving to a city that has Michelin star restaurants and walking in there and staging, and they're like, no, you need more experience. And being like, me? Like, no, I'm ready for it. Trust me. But they were right. You know, I didn't have the attitude or the capabilities or the aptitude to exist in a 3-Michelin star kitchen back then. And, you know, I was very focused at a young age on being like, let me get the skill so I can become a chef. So I walked into a bakery and was like, I need to learn how to bake. And then I walked into a butcher shop and was like, I want to learn how to butcher. And I was working like 3 jobs simultaneously, all trying to put together experience so that I can learn how to do things my way. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until I moved to New York and landed at the Nomad Hotel. It's when I first met Vinny. Once again, surrounded by like really, 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 really strong, talented chefs, and was like, I may not be the best, but I'm here and everybody's going to know it. Like I've got like 5 or 6 years of experience now. I've worked in a couple Michelin star kitchens. I know who I am. I know where I'm going. I know what I want to do, but I'm still not anywhere close. And I've still got a lot to learn. And that restaurant specifically, like the Nomad Hotel, was the hardest, the best, methodical every step of the way. You were just constantly being like, I'm not good enough and I need to like come back tomorrow stronger. And then every job that I've had after that, I've been competent, capable. I've just put together all my skills. And so I think New York City really turned me into a very strong chef at a young age too. You know, I'm 33. And so like looking at like Shuai and Katiana and some of the other chefs, I'm like, yo, they're like in their upper 30s, 40s. And they're like, they've got the resumes to match it. They've been doing this for, you know, they've got a 5 or 6, 7 years on me. So I can only imagine where I'm going to get, you know, where I'm going to be once I get to their, you know, that age and that pinnacle. But more importantly, they've all got their own restaurants. So I'm like, I need to like learn from what they're doing. And like, ask them business questions about, you know, how you found your investors or like, how did you take that risk that initially got you off the ground? And so it's just ultimately a culmination of like just the pursuit of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And as a chef, like it's, you have to like, it's the pursuit of it. And that's the only way you can put it because you don't know what's next unless you're constantly planning for it. And if you're just bouncing restaurant to restaurant, there's never going to be another. And it's just going to be the same kind of, you know, revolving door. And I think a lot of the chefs on Top Chef specifically know where they're going or know where they're at and know what they want. And so the, you know, the whole Top Chef platform just puts you in rare air where you're understanding. And that's just the culmination of like proper planning. Like I've wanted to apply. I don't know if you guys saw, but I remember like the first week when everything started dropping, I took a screenshot of me texting the Top Chef page on Instagram.
Yes. Yes.
About applying back in like 2022. And then like every year being like, I'm going to get on the show. I need to figure it out. Like, I think I'm ready. I want to do it. And you know, it's just proper planning and performance and staying locked into what you're doing and, you know, writing things down and putting it in the ethos.
Yes. Manifest.
Yeah. 100%. 1000%. So
that's unbelievable. Well, so, you know, maybe early days are just like early thoughts on a restaurant down the line, but we know, of course, we saw on the show your just pride and embrace of Caribbean cuisine, what you call contemporary Caribbean. What do you hope really shines through in the food that you make? What's the impression that you want to leave people with?
I want to leave people with an impression that for the people that are coming behind me, that you can do it your way. You can figure it out. You're special. Like, figure it out. You know, I'm the only person on this earth with the name Corwin Anthony Hemming. So for me, it's like, well, what makes you unique? Like, lean into that because, you know, the show, in the cold challenge, having the food and wine editor say that this dish is restaurant ready, I'm like, you know that, but like, it's reassuring to hear. And so I think to the people that are listening or watching or paying attention, it's just go do it. Like, don't be scared, jump off the bridge and deploy your parachute and land somewhere where you want to land and, you know, water the flowers where you're at and where you grew a garden. And so that's kind of like, you know, my mentality right now. I'm definitely always planning long-term for a restaurant. I would love to open up something that's casual fine dining that really highlights Caribbean food that is on the same level with a one Michelin star restaurant. Just because I've done it for so long, I know I can do it and I'm ready for the challenge and I'm excited for like the future. And so I kind of sound redundant, but like this top, had I not gone on Top Chef, I don't know if I'd be feeling this way right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I say it with like a lot of pride because I was, like I said, I was bored with cooking. I was kind of like kind of getting lost and kind of feeling stagnant and like, you know, I don't want to go back to restaurants. I don't want to go back to restaurants. If it's not my own, I don't want to do it. Like, I'm tired of working for other people and not getting where I want to be. Like, they don't see my worth at any of the time. I'm a little bit misunderstood or I'm written off and not given a fair shot. So like, I'm tired of that. I don't want to do it anymore. And post COVID, like, things have changed so much.
Yeah. That's so for sure.
I, you know, to the person that's watching, to go back to the main point, I think that I have touched a lot of people's hearts, specifically like my friends that have kids. Their kids are watching, like my nieces are watching. I've had friends be like, yo, my kid wants to be a chef because he like, would you sign a menu for them? And I'm like, I didn't see that coming.
Wow.
And that to me is just like, that means you're doing something right. If you're able to inspire the next generation, you're doing something right. Yeah. Like, you know, all my friends that are Caribbean are like, yo, my cousins back home in the islands or that are Jamaican here in the United States are loving like every time they see you on camera with the flag on. And I'm like, I did not even account for how deep this was going to go in that direction, because representation is very, very important, but it's also real. And so I think that to me is like, you're in your God-given purpose and you're doing something the right way if you're able to inspire kids. Like, you know, I had one of my friend's kids was like, they want to be Tom Colicchio. They don't want to cook. They want to be Tom Colicchio. They want to be the guy at this table making the decisions.
They want to be doing the podcast that talks about the actual talented people.
Yeah.
And so, and that's just their imagination working, you know, that has nothing to do with me, but it's because like I had a little thumbprint that made them, that sparked them in some way.
You know what it is too? It's seeing the representation, but for people who, and I say this is just from somewhere fairly rural, and like there was not a lot of representation where I grew up. And mm-hmm. you see, especially now in these later seasons of Top Chef, you know, earlier Top Chefs, it's all French fine dining and yep. it's all the same. To see the diversity of just perspective on the plate, cuisines represented, it broadens the understanding of just the general viewer too, for people who don't know what Jamaican is, or Jamaican food is, or looks like, or tastes like. It introduces that to somebody who now is, okay, I have to go get that. Or like, I have to keep an eye out. I need to figure out where I can have food like this. Mm-hmm. And so I think even before I found myself in New York, Top Chef was always a show where it just broadens your worldview, period. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool too. But of course, just to like see your food on TV has got to be incredible. And what an inspiring just place to be.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty weird watching yourself on TV. you obviously remember all the moments, but how they put it together, they shot the show this season specifically really well. And they're doing a really good job of highlighting everybody on an individual basis to where I feel like you get to know them really well.
You do. Mm-hmm. We've spent time with everybody, which mm-hmm. is really nice. There's nobody who's like been hidden from the you know, gaze of the camera. Mm-hmm. We are so lucky because we got to meet you up close and personal. And this has just been so nice chatting with you, Corwin. And we're sorry to see you go from the show, but we're also kind of happy because we get to talk to you. So
I'm in the game,
But now you're locked in, like, and it's so cool to hear. Like, it just feels like you're just in another gear now, and super excited to see where you take that. And next time we're in DC, we'll have to give you a shout.
Come find me. I would love nothing more than to feed you guys.
Love it.
You know, that's who I am. And
we won't be too critical.
No, please not.
Made
us the agua chili with the, and it was amazing, or not, you know what I mean? Or it's like, I don't know what he was thinking.
This whole episode is about Corwin's food. Yeah. No, it's funny. It's like we don't even critique food, right? Like we critique like the look of a food on a TV screen. Show. It's really preposterous, but it lets us just meet really cool and insanely talented people like you. And so for that, we'll be forever grateful. But Corwin, thank you so much for spending your day with us.
Appreciate you, Nancy.
So nice to meet you. And
nice to meet you as well.
We are huge fans, so we look forward to everything good coming your way.
Thank you so much.
Woo! Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys.